It is Locked On Jazz for the 25th of August, the day of Game 5. Can the Jazz knock out the Nuggets? What's been most surprising about the series? What have we learned about the teams? We do it in a crossover edition. Locked On Nuggets, Adam Monis joins me as we cross over and dig deep into the series the Jazz lead 3-1. It is Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making you it way more fun to be a Jazz fan each and every day. All right, 4:30, 4:50 tip off today. By the way, if you're running around, I'm just going to give you that little trick. It's actually a 4:50 tip off today. So you don't have to rush, but catch the pregame show when it starts on TV. Join Ron and I on the radio. Big game, game 5 today. So Adam Monis, Locked On Nuggets, joins me. We kind of break it down, get his thoughts. I lead most of the conversation, so hopefully it'll be insightful, get their perspective on it. I think you know where I stand on everything. We've covered most of it. I think it's going to be a really, really, really tough game. I think Denver made great adjustments. I thought we got fortunate to win game 4. We probably shouldn't have won game 4. And I think this is going to be an incredible battle. I suspect Denver comes out and fights pretty hard. I don't think they're going to roll. If we can get up 7 or 8, maybe they start to think about having private planes waiting them for them to get them back to the home or somewhere else. But I don't think these guys, unless they have some really big internal turmoil, roll. It is interesting. We've had a bunch of series at 3-0. None of those teams won. Of the O teams won. This is our first series at 3-1, and I suspected when all of this started, we'd have great games and bad series, so we'll see what happens. All right, let's do it. Brought to you by Rock Auto today, as well as all of my good friends around the Utah Basin. Let's do it. Here is our crossover edition. Crossover revisited for today's edition of Locked On, well, Jazz, because I'm David Locke, and...
I'm Adam Mattes, Locked On Nuggets crossover edition. Let's do this. Let's get into it.
I don't think either of us expected that it would be 3-1 at this point. I don't think either of us expected to be 3-1 with the amount of incredible scoring outbursts. I don't think either of us expected that there have been 2 blowouts. I don't think either of us would have expected either team to shoot the way they've shot. So this has been a lot of, at least in my opinion, kind of surprises. What, Adam, do you think from your end, at least I'll put it on you first, and I'm more than willing to take the answer to the question as well. What do you think was we underestimated? We did a crossover a week ago or whatever it was, a little less.
Yeah.
What do you think we underestimated about this series, about some of the matchups, about the players?
On my end, I think there's a lot. I mean, some of the stuff that this series has obviously unfolded a lot different from what I talked about a week ago. But I think the number one thing is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but Utah's ability to sort of remake themselves around Donovan Mitchell as the pick and roll attacker. I know they had that in them, but especially those first 2 games, just the way they were able to play through him in that spread pick and roll really looks just so different from what I saw from them in the regular season, certainly pre-bubble, and just their ability to kind of go to that one note and just keep playing that one note over and over again to obviously great results for Utah.
That's interesting. I think that specifically that the Jazz coaching staff, I knew this going in, and we saw it in the scrimmage game, in the seeding games. They really took the time off to kind of build the team. They didn't take the time off to try to, you know, recreate or fix what they had. They went, all right, we have data points now. We're going to be a totally different team. What can we be different? And we don't have Bojan Bogdanovic, so it doesn't do us any good to try to be the same team. So they did remake who they were. They became a little faster paced, a little bit more spread. They shot a lot more threes into the last game. And they had the largest 3-point shooting increase of any of the 8 teams in the bubble and took the second most amount of threes in the seeding game, which is different to who they were in the regular season. So in that sense, yes, I think you're right. They really did kind of change who they are as a basketball team without Bogdanovic. And with that 3.5 months off, Quinn Snyder was like, who do we want to be? Not who are we?
And I think if you look league-wide right now in this entire playoffs, outside of the Lakers who are having a lot of success, you know, with their just playing really, really big, you look at Oklahoma City, they've evened that series, but not through Steven Adams. They've evened the series by going small. I mean, the Boston Celtics, Joel Embiid, you know, really being rendered sort of ineffective even defensively by playing small, playing this. So you see Utah and you see them sort of run to this. And by the way, have three just great pick and roll players. Now that Conley's back, three just great pick and roll players and the willingness to take those off the dribble three pointers, which I'm sure we're going to talk about because Utah has just really weaponized that against Denver's attempt at playing drop coverage. Just their ability to kind of play and move that direction has really rendered Denver's whatever Denver had. I mean, they were bad defensively to begin with. They were really bad inside the bubble where teams are just shooting lights out. And they've just completely rendered them ineffective. I mean, when Utah doesn't score, it's usually because they missed at best a semi-contested shot.
Yeah. I mean, Utah's shooting game in game four was ridiculous. I mean, frankly, Denver's shooting game in game one was ridiculous. I think Denver's 20 of 33 above the break threes.
Yeah.
Utah had their best single shooting game of the entire season in game number four. I mean, it's not like if you actually ask me, I think Denver should have won game four and Utah should have won game one. Now there's a butterfly effect. So who knows what it would have meant.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's an interesting thing. Here's the one I underestimated. And actually, I had it in my notes and I don't think I ever asked you about it because I actually thought it felt tacky because I didn't think it had a lot of value. And that was that Denver was 22nd in the league defensively in the bubble. And I just thought to myself, there's so many bowl minutes and there's so many weird minutes. And they started three bigs. And I just didn't take any credence into that the loss of Gary Harris and Will Barton really left Denver as defensively as vulnerable as they are. That was what I underestimated going into this series.
Well, I think even if you're watching Denver, it was hard to analyze those eight seeding games. I mean, here's the thing about Denver there's a lot with Denver that I think I underestimated the impact it would have in a playoff series. One of them was, I don't know that people realize this, Denver had, I think, nine players arrive late to the bubble, presumably for COVID-related reasons. You know, it never announced officially what it was, but they had nine players show up late, including never having a practice with everybody until after the last preseason game. Right. So you get right into the seeding games with only, I think, 2 days. There was 2 days or 3 days between the last preseason game and then the first actual game. So Denver just was throwing things together on the fly going into it. And you thought, OK, well, the eight games are basically preseason, this or that. But then when Gary Harris went down, Barton went down, Denver completely remade their roster. And Michael Porter Jr. had such a great seeding round where he really shot the ball well, and you thought, oh, okay, this guy is going from a guy who showed promise in limited minutes to all of a sudden you're playing him 35 minutes and he looks like a starter. Well, I think maybe some of that excitement and hot shooting and this or that really undermined just how much a team can pick at a weakness in a roster, including something like that. And not just his defense, but you sent an interesting note after Denver beat Utah, I believe in overtime in the seeding round, where you said Denver just has such clarity about who they are and, you know, top, you know, they know who the first guy is, the second guy. Well, weirdly enough, in game two and especially in game three, I thought Denver looked like a team that had no idea who they were on the offensive end, who's supposed to be taking shots here or there, and where does Michael Porter fit into all of that. And I think it had a bit of a snowball effect. So for me, Denver just losing Gary and Will Barton and then trying to replace him with a guy that at his best is going to be a high usage offensive player, it just really turned out to be way too much to do in short order.
So I talked to an executive today and they said that they thought the untalked about storyline of the league right now in the Western Conference particularly was teams that came as one versus teams that straggled into the bubble.
Yeah.
So they were talking about Denver and Houston straggled in and the Clippers straggled in, whereas Dallas, Utah, and Oklahoma City all came in collectively, all had their group together early. They weren't allowed to practice as a group, but they were kind of together as a group even before they got to the bubble. It's an interesting thing about the way this whole thing has impacted personalities. Whether that happened before it, whether that tells us something about those teams, I don't know. But that is, it's factual that Oklahoma City, Utah, Dallas were like together before they came to the bubble and all entered as a group, whereas Denver, the Clippers, and Houston trickled in either due to COVID-related reasons or because guys just didn't really want to be there.
Yeah, and I think there's even, especially on Denver's part, a little bit of a maturity thing there. And I don't mean that in like a character thing. I just mean about like, you know, you're looking at Denver, and one of their things, if you just look at them structurally, is who's the team's leader, you know, how much do they have that toughness and backbone? And I think you're seeing a lot of that get exposed in the series. And some of that is, I don't know that they had a guy that was calling everybody in the weeks leading up to, you know, arriving in Orlando and said, hey, everybody, it's about time. Make sure you're doing the right things. Make sure you're staying away from people. Like, we got to get there. It's going to be an advantage if we all get there healthy. I don't think Denver had that. In fact, I feel very confident saying they did not have that. And that was part of why they had guys end up not getting into the bubble 2, 3, even 4 weeks after, you know, Toronto arrived.
That's an interesting, you know, I almost feel like the Jazz, who had the worst offseason ever, right? They had, we shut down the league.
Right.
And I say we, cause I was there, you know, Rudy and Donovan had whatever they had, like, you know, Zoom calls that supposedly Rudy didn't get onto, Donovan, Rudy not talking, like, they might have act like, I actually think, and now this team, now you have Mike Conley finishing an interview saying, I've played with a lot of great groups and some groups that are kind of known to be some of the closest groups in the history of the league, with that Gasol and Tony Allen and Zach and some of that. And he's saying, hey, this is one of the, this is the best, as good as any group I've ever played with. We're as close as any group I've ever played with. It's almost as though the Jazz were desperately in need of the bubble to get back together as a group and be forced to be like, all right, we're going to figure this out, or we're going to have the most miserable 2 months of our lives.
Denver's having the most miserable 2 months of their lives, I think, unfortunately. And it's not just that, but you arrive late to the bubble, so then you don't want to play certain guys minutes because they haven't practiced yet. You work them in. Denver had the Utah game in the seeding round was, I think, the only game with all of their pieces there in which they actually tried. You know, they threw a game to the Lakers. They threw a game to the Clippers. They threw a game to the Blazers. So when you go through the whole seeding round and you really don't get a full 48 minutes of this is how we're going to do things, you only get one of those. It's a little bit unsurprising that games 2 and games 3, they really hit what I consider to be an identity crisis.
He's Adam Modis of Locked On Nuggets. I'm David Locke of Locked On Jazz. And we are bringing you a crossover. A crossover edition of Locked On Jazz and Locked On Nuggets. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete or a stay-at-home podcaster, or if your team's lost 3 of their last 4, or if your team's won 3 of the last 4. It doesn't matter. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. And luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, recharge when life gets chaotic, or when your favorite player has a game that makes you wonder if he quit. Oh, I'm sorry. That was cheap, wasn't it? That was cheap. You did, though. You really seemed like you needed CBD Recover.
I did. On that day. I don't know if there's enough CBD in the world for that recovery.
CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica, vitamin B6 to give you support you need when it matters. There's also CBD Freeze with menthol, is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints and convenient, easy-to-use roller and shareable squeeze tube. Go over to CBDMD.com. Use the promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase. Superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. They also have a whole line of topicals and everything else CBD has to offer, so check it out. They're offering, again, 25% off on your next order. Use the promo code NBA at checkout. And today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, located at 4646 South State Street, also located in Logan and in Linden. I was just down there yesterday looking at all the cars that are out there. I have been telling you about the Sonata that I was driving for the last little while. It's just totally incredible. I had to turn it back in because I went to too many miles. They do not have a lot of those Sonatas around. So, by the way, if you're looking for a sedan, it has 3,800 miles on it right now. It has been driven very calmly. It is awesome. It's got a 3 in front of the price tag. It's smooth. It looks great. It drives itself. It's got every bell and every whistle. It's got super space, great trunk space, 4-door. Awesome. Sonata is now available at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I'm totally dead serious. It's that good a car. I would literally just go get it right here and now. If you're in the market for a car, check it out. If you're in the market for a car, include Hyundai in the list. They're remarkable what they're able to do, what they're able to get in their price tag. The Tucson is kind of the perfect midsize SUV for you. The Kona's the zippy, fast little thing. They got great deals on that right now. And the Santa Fe, I already own 2 of them. So I'm telling you something that's true. We already own 2 of them. So I have taken advantage of Hyundai. Do the same. Email me at dlock09@gmail.com if you're going to stop by Murdoch Hyundai in Logan or in Linden or at 4646 South State Street. Send me an email and we'll get you the VIP treatment. Send it to me at dlock09@gmail.com. I was asked on our postgame show, is Quinn Snyder out coaching Mike Malone? And I thought it was an interesting question because I think it's an easy answer. My answer was this. I think Quinn Snyder can be coaching a nearly perfect, fabulous series, exposing the weaknesses of Denver. But if those weaknesses are not able to be covered, it's not Mike Malone's fault. So yeah. I don't know that Quinn Snyder, just because he's coaching a great series, has to be out coaching Mike Malone. But I do think Quinn Snyder has done a pretty masterful job of knowing how to attack Denver.
He clearly understands exactly where Denver's sort of pressure points are and has gotten the team to really buy into that. I mean, the thing I was so impressed with Utah throughout this whole series is how much their players understand the game plan and how much they just stick to it. I mean, there's really not a lot of deviating from what they're supposed to do. There's glaring weaknesses. They'll attack it. If they don't get it in the first 10 seconds, they'll reset and attack it again. And they just, everybody kind of seems to know if Denver plays this type of coverage in the pick and roll, we're going to do this thing. If they're going to do that coverage, we're going to do this thing. And it's just such a masterful job. And I think Donovan Mitchell, part of his sort of ascension during this series has been his ability to read. Not that Denver's throwing complicated things, because like you said, Denver doesn't have a lot of options to go to defensively, but just the way he sort of reads exactly what Denver's trying to do and then takes advantage of whatever it is that they're giving. So I think, yes, the thing with Michael Malone, I think when you look back at this season, Michael Porter was so clearly a talented player all the way back in October. And he didn't play. And then November came and he didn't play. In December, January, he finally got his opportunity when some guys went down, got a little bit of an injury, and just never got back into the lineup. And I think Michael Malone had no idea there was going to be a pandemic. He had no idea Gary Harris and Will Barton were going to be unavailable after a 4-month layoff. He had no idea of any of that stuff. But you get here now and you say, okay, they need Michael Porter to be ready for a playoffs. Well, he's got 500, 600 minutes under his belt. He doesn't know anything about NBA basketball. And now you're kind of relying on him, and he just wasn't ready. So to me, I think when I look back at the season and how I'll define it, Michael Malone, I think, was a little too concerned in October, November, and December about getting some of these regular season wins when, in hindsight, if Denver was 3 or 4 wins worse but had him another 500 minutes of experience, I don't know that he would be as bad defensively as he has been in this series.
It's interesting. The other one that the Harris and Barton injury left was Jeremy Grant having to guard the ball handler on the pick and roll. And actually, the data on that is pretty revealing. Jeremy Grant's like, of the 120 guys in the league that have guarded the most pick and roll, he's the 16th worst in the league at guarding the pick and roll. It's not surprising, really. He's 6'8". He's a fabulous on-ball defender. He's a great weak side defender. He's a super help defender. But on ball, getting hit by the pick, not a lot of 6'8", 6'9 guys are very good at that.
I mean, he's a little bit of a fish out of water trying this, you know. I mean, he's a power forward. I think he's a small forward in certain moments, but guarding Donovan Mitchell specifically, a guy that's not just a guard, but one of the quicker guards, fastest guards in all of the NBA, is really tough. I still, if you look at all of the options Denver has thrown out there, there aren't really any good ones. So I still think that going into game 5, you're going to see a lot of him there, and there's certain things Denver can kind of do and had a little bit of success with, namely switching Jokic onto Donovan Mitchell and switching Grant onto Rudy Gobert. They've been doing that late in shot clocks. If they get to, you know, Utah runs their first action, they don't get anything out of it. That second action, Denver's been switching that, and I think it actually makes sense in this one way. Denver's given up 1.5 points per possession right now when those guys are out there. So if you could just take away a little bit of that, not to give them second chance points, that's probably the best of bad options. But yeah, I mean, Denver right now, they're playing guys on Donovan Mitchell that have no experience in those positions.
What is your overall feeling? Do you think the series is done? Do you think the Nuggets come out and fight in game 5? Or do you think that the unique circumstance of the bubble, they're thinking about finally getting home and just winning 3 seems too daunting?
I think Denver fights. I mean, this series has evolved in a funny way because I actually think, as constructed, even without, you know, Bogdanovich, without Barton, without Gary Harris, I think these two teams are actually closer to what we saw in games 1 and 4 than what we saw in game 2 and 3. I think Denver lost hold of the rope. I think there was not a lot of trust in Michael Porter, and it affected, sadly, it affected, I think, Jokic in particular, but some of the other players as well, in terms of just what level of effort they gave, you know, in that third game especially. But I think the teams are much more like the game 1 and game 4. Does that mean Denver can beat them now 3 times in a row? No, we're talking about games that come down to the wire. I mean, how many times has Utah played this year where it's gone to overtime or come down to the last 2 minutes of the game? Almost all of them, other than games 2 and 3. So to ask, to think that the ball's going to bounce in Denver's favor now three times in a row is tough. But I do think Denver's going to come out and give their best shot. I wish the adjustment Michael Malone made with the lineup and the rotation in games four was made in either game two or at the latest game three, because I do think if the series is 2-1, I'm feeling a lot more confident. At 3-1, I think Denver's going to put up a fight. Maybe they win tomorrow, but every single game from here on out, I think will be a pretty tough battle.
The Morris Murray combination is a good one. The +9 during the regular season, +9 during the series, it changed how they played. There was a feeling watching game four that Denver had gotten static and they were just doing the same thing almost every time down. And by the time you've seen it for the 300th time, the Jazz got used to it. Denver played a completely different offensive game. And I know that the Jazz torched them. I didn't mind what Mike Malone did defensively in game four either.
I mean, again, you're trying to pick your poison there. I mean, there's not a lot of great options. So in my opinion, that one works the best. Utah's going to score. Can you put enough pressure on them to keep scoring? And Denver did. I mean, that was a high scoring game. But you mentioned the two playing together. If you go back, I believe the season before, those two played a lot of minutes together, over 650 minutes, and they had a really great net rating. Offensively, they really clicked. I think Jamal Murray is best when somebody else gets to bring the ball up, and he's more the primary pick-and-roll player. They didn't go to it this year, and they're going to it in the playoffs now sort of out of necessity, and I'm not surprised that Jamal Murray had 50, although 50 he was on fire, but I'm not surprised he looked differently than he did in previous games when sort of that the rest of the point guarding duties were taken off his plate. So that's something I think Denver has found that I think will continue to work in game five.
Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell. Did either of us realize our guys could do this?
Wow. You know, it's funny. No, you know, with Donovan Mitchell, I mean, he's been just so impressive. Denver really struggles with specifically this exact combo that, again, I didn't realize Utah was going to rely on so heavily, a speedy point guard and an above the rim lob threat. I mean, that's just death for Denver. Rashawn Holmes had this 30-point game or something against Denver one time trying to guard the Fox Holmes pick and roll. And you think, okay, are these guys great? No, but that's exactly athletic, rolling big, super speedy point guard. Denver just has struggled with that. But the thing about Donovan Mitchell that's impressed me so much, in addition to those pull-up three-pointer numbers, which I want to ask you if it's sustainable. I can ask you after this. But the thing is his ability to read the court and some of the passes he's making. To me, that's the part about him that I didn't expect.
He's, you know, these guys are just getting better, right? Like, I mean, that's, yeah. I talked to Kevin Pelton the other day. He was like, you know, we all just put these arbitrary dates on the beginning of the year as a time when players get better or the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
He's like, hey, we're just 5 months down the road. They're better than they were 5 months ago. Like, that's what's going on here with a lot of these players. And it's an understandable, like, I've always loved Jamal Murray. So it makes, you know, it makes sense to me that he's getting better. We've always thought he was going to be just a terrific scorer. And I frankly like him playing with another ball handler. I think it does a lot for him.
I think that this is my theory on guards specifically, maybe even ball handling guards, point guards, is they get more improvement from the start of the year to the end of the year than they get in an off season. I think oftentimes that's probably true because it's more real life reps that they're getting, not, you know, individual skill set work.
So in regards to the off the bounce shooting, you mean the fact that Donovan's shooting 55% from three, Clarkson shooting 57%, and Mike Conley shooting 55% from three? Like, is
that good? Those numbers are good, right?
That is not sustainable. Actually, though, interestingly, by the way, it's not sustainable. The same way that Jordan Clarkson's like 2-for-20 on catch and shoots is not sustainable. So there is a little bit of, I think that's what Jordan Clarkson is last time I checked. I'll have to check and make sure.
He was incredible in that last game. Not just the shot making, but even just, he doesn't feel like he's ever pressing, which is the number one trait of Jordan Clarkson. And that game last night, I just didn't ever felt like he was out of control. And I always think he's out of control.
He's 3-of-17 on catch and shoot threes. So he'll get some of those. The other, no, those numbers, I mean, the Jazz better defend at some point in the series here. We're going to have a few more games. I mean, Utah's not really stopped Denver in this. I guess they stopped them and they broke them in game three, whether that's stopping them.
I would say they broke them. Yeah, I'd say they broke them.
And they defended for about 5 minutes in the third quarter of game four, and that turned out to be enough. But no, the Jazz cannot stay in relying on this level of shooting to win this, like,
what is up with the shooting from the Jazz? Because part of me thinks like, okay, they're hot, they're going to regress. But part of me also thinks Denver is not good defensively. Utah is really confident, especially Donovan Mitchell. He's just so confident. they're in the bubble. There's no crowd. There's all these different things. Part of me wonders if maybe that's not true. If you don't have a tough team and you have an empty gym, guys are just going to shoot like it's practice.
So I think the thing that was maybe underestimated, I'll give you an answer to that. Actually, I'll give you an answer to that as we continue. Today's show brought to you in part by rockauto.com. There's no need to go to the brick and mortar store. There's no need to go in and have some guy sitting behind a computer tapping things in and your selection suddenly being what they have available at the price they want. Instead, rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. And they do it with the same price for do-it-yourselfers as they do for professionals, and they do it with amazing selection. Unique and remarkably easy to navigate websites, kind of old school, quickly setting the parts available for you for your vehicle, choose the brand, specifications, prices you prefer. Don't worry, it's their the selection's mammoth. The prices are always reliably low. It's all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. So go to rockauto.com right now. See the parts that are available for your car, truck, and be amazed that all the prices are reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. When you're checking out, please make sure you write on Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us section. That's Locked On, the How Did You Hear About Us section box, so they know who sent you, and that's us, Locked On Jazz and Locked On Nuggets, doing it together. See, we're like mass selection and we're reliably low price every time. It's rockauto.com. And today's show is brought to you by the Mudslide Cookie, the victory cookie of all cookies, the great Mudslide Cookie. Okay, it's actually brought to you by the store, which is located 6200 South and 20th East, also located down at the Gateway. Stop by when you go to the 6200 South 20th East spot, you'll get that great community feel. Boy, their wood-fired pizzas have been great. I was so fun. I drove by, picked up my sweet and sour the other day, drove it down, had it at the arena. Perfect setup. Thanks to DJ Bowler Jack, Jeff, and Scott for making that possible. Jeff and Scott own and run the store. It's a family company. It's Utah's own. You can feel it when you're there. They're attached to the community. They're bringing in the local products. They're searching for the best things for you. They have incredible stock. They're able to keep the supply lines going right now. And then they have that great feel where the local, you know, kids are taking the elderly people out to their car and giving them. They're even delivering still today to some of the elderly people who don't want the contacts. The other day I saw Amy leaving with this collection of groceries, and was from one of their elderly customers who doesn't want to have the contacts right now during COVID. That's the kind of community feel you get at the store. You get Utah's own products. You get great setups. It's all at 6200 South 20th East. Connected to it also is Cottonwood Ace, which is the best Traeger lineup out there, and all the Yeti things as well. And downtown at the Gateway, right at the Gateway, the Urban Store. It's kind of where I'm stopping by and picking up food before each and every game, so I'll probably do the same today. That's all the store, 6200 South 20th East and at the Gateway. Please stop by and get your victory Mudslide cookie after a win today. I think the one area where the Jazz, two things about the Jazz that have been underestimated here or not talked about enough. One is since December 24th, they're the best offense in the NBA.
Wow.
So since they got rid of Jeff Green, Dante Exum, and added Jordan Clarkson, they were the number one offense in the NBA. They might be really great offensively. They weren't, the bubble numbers dropped them a little bit because they played Mione and Jarrell Brantley a lot.
Yeah.
But they were the number one catch and shoot team. They were the number one open 3-point shooting team. They were the number one offensive team with an offensive rating of 117. They had the fifth best differential. They had the number one effective field goal percentage. Now, right before the stoppage, they were about to go on this run of about 6, 7, 8 really good teams, and you were going to find out who they were. So that's one, and they're playing, when they play a not very good defensive team, they usually roast them. The second one is and you're going to laugh because you knew I was going to go here, is the offensive impact Rudy Gobert has on games. If you look at Rudy Gobert and without Derek Favors, frankly, I could be polite. It's with a non-big next to him, right? The Jazz offense has always been better than the 75th percentile. According to Cleaning the Glass, usually the 80th percentile.
Yeah.
And you know who those fours have been? Jay Crowder, Tabos, who's the worst catch and shoot player in the league.
Yeah, these are like bad stretch fours.
Tabo Sefolosha, Jonas Jerebko, a very old Boris Diaw, right? Like the fact that they lost Bojan Bogdanović hurts them, but that Royce O'Neal's playing, like it doesn't matter. Rudy's role to the rim.
I wonder if it actually helps them in a way. I mean, their offense can't get better.
Well, right. It can't. But Rudy's role, screening and rolling to the rim, taxes a defense so significantly if there's four shooters on the floor that the Jazz offense, no matter who those shooters have been always been really, really good if Rudy's on the floor.
Which is why I think it's going to be interesting just seeing what the direction the league goes, because you're watching teams like Boston go at Joel Embiid, a good defender, although, you know, albeit, you know, didn't have a ton of help, but he's also just a turnstile right now defensively when you can spread out the court. You look around, the teams that are having success, your Houstons, even now your Oklahoma City going small, just so many teams are just switching and saying, forget it, forget bigs, forget any of this impact. And I'm really just kind of watching the series and going, okay, there's things Denver can do. I know that Jokic isn't a rim protector, this and that, but I watch how much they can, Utah can spread you out, how dynamic Conley is in the pick and roll, how fast and dynamic Donovan Mitchell is, how much Joe Ingles can be the third option there. And I just go, man, how many teams can guard this without switching? I'm just not sure that you can anymore. And me as a Denver fan, as somebody that enjoys watching Jokic and him having an impact, I watch it and go, I just don't know if you can guard this traditionally anymore.
I talked to an executive in the league today who said, I don't think you can drop the big anymore. I don't think you can drop the big in the playoffs. And I countered with, you can drop the big if they deny the rim. But if you're dropping the big and they don't deny the rim, then you're really in trouble.
Even then, I don't know that we're going to see it, because who's left? You know, you look at maybe like a Lakers team, but there's just not a lot of teams left that have that guy. Dallas isn't going to necessarily have it. Houston doesn't have it. So I don't know that we're going to get to prove this right or wrong. What I think with Denver, you know, they've been able to score in the two games they've been competitive in this one, is they've been able to kind of keep pace. And I think when you watched them in that second and that third game, that a lot of it was their offensive identity. I mean, 14 points in the first quarter, you know, just kind of falling off there. And that's the one thing I want to see, is can you make Utah work on the other end in a way that's maybe meaningful and just on the margins? Again, you're not going to stop them. You saw the Clippers the other day, or Dallas the other day, wins. They had a 123 defensive rating or something like that. They weren't stopping anybody either. I wonder if you can just sort of outscore teams, wear them down, and then when it gets to the fourth quarter, maybe then you have an edge. Maybe you're drawing fouls throughout the game and tilting the game that way. Denver really hasn't been able to do that so far in this series, at least not consistently. But that this is an offensive league right now.
Yeah, and we have got two great offensive teams playing each other. I mean, I think I texted you. I think that was the greatest offensive rated game ever in the history of the playoffs.
It was really fun. I mean, for Denver, you know, obviously falling down 3-1 was the storyline. But as I went back and watched it, and you just see the incredible guard play. You know, you saw so many tough shots made on both ends of the court, and you just think, man, this league is so crazy right now with how many guys can make plays, and not just plays, but dynamic plays. You know, things that require all skill sets. You have so many at any given moment. You have 6-7 players who can dribble, shoot, pass, make high level reads, and you just go, wow, this league is really, really talented right now.
Denver wins this series, winning 3 in a row. How?
Well, they got to get their offense flowing a lot more than they have. They got to hope for a little bit of a regression from Utah, and I think that they're going to need a Jokic game from behind the 3-point line. I was encouraged that Jokic took 10 3-pointers yesterday, including right off the bat. I mean, I think he started 0-4. Denver's up 3 points at the end of the first quarter. And Rudy Gobert, by the way, completely allowing that shot to happen. If Jokic starts a game 2-for-2, 3-for-3, in addition to maybe pushing the score up a little bit and pushing the envelope, I do wonder if it forces Gobert out. Now, having a 2-game lead, I'm guessing that Gobert's going to just sit in the paint and live there for a while anyway, for an entire game. But I do wonder if Jokic can start to knock down some of those open shots they're giving him, if it breaks Utah's defense a little bit and forces Rudy Gobert to move side to side, because that's when he's going to pick up fouls. Sitting in the paint and just deterring anybody from going near the basket, I don't think he's going to get in foul trouble that way. You got to make him move around the court, and Denver hasn't been able to do that yet.
Interesting move by Quinn Snyder late in that game. He tried a possession earlier, and Jokic drew a foul, and he went back to it where he had Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles guarding, and so then he could just switch that to get out to Jokic's three-point shooter, and then Rudy sits basically in a one-man zone at the rim. I wonder whether Quinn's willing to roll that out earlier in the game than the final possession or two.
Denver has been good at exploiting that. I mean, Jokic is very, very good against undersized players, you know, forcing the double team, getting down on the block. So if they do try that, I'm curious to see if Denver's prepared for it. But my hunch is, especially early in this game, they're going to have Gobert on him, and they're going to give him some wide open looks. And Denver's at a moment now where they, you know, they have nothing to hold back. You got to let it fly, and you got to hope that Jokic connects on it. He's really not a great three-point shooter, 33, 34%, something like that career. But if he can have one of those nights where he just starts, you know, 5 for 7, something like that, maybe it changes the complexion of the game.
The feeling after game 4, listening to you, was if they lose this series, it's a catastrophic moment for Denver where they have to recalibrate. Do you think it's actually that big a deal now that things have calmed down a little bit if they, in fact, lose the series?
It's a little bit. I mean, I think what you look at is you go, can a Jokic, Michael Porter Jr., Jamal Murray trio, can you build around that in a way that's going to stop anybody? And if not, does it matter? And I think both of those questions are kind of curious. Did Utah, I think some of this depends on if Utah does advance, what do they look like against other teams? Are they doing the same thing or do they suddenly look pedestrian in the playoffs? So I think there's a lot of things at play here, but I do think you look at that and you go, okay, I think you had this idea that Denver was keeping the group together. They love this continuity. They want to do all. And now you look at it, you go, okay, is Torrey Craig a player that you can count on in a playoff series? I think he has 20 points and he's played, you know, starters minutes for 4 games. What kind of other players off of the bench are they? Have a lot of one-way players, defense guys or offense guys. And I think you look at that and say, you question it. And then the last thing, and this is why another reason I think Utah's making shots, Donovan Mitchell is not afraid at all of the Denver Nuggets, and his confidence is so high. I thought it was so weird when Paul Millsap stared him down at the end of the game yesterday, right before Donovan Mitchell hit what basically was the clincher, because it was so clear Donovan Mitchell wasn't afraid. You don't stare down a guy that has scored on you at will for 4 games, and then you stare him down because you got one stop that wasn't even a stop. Utah got the ball back. I was just thinking, nobody is afraid of Denver. They don't have any toughness. They don't have any of those tough guys, and Jokic isn't that guy. Michael Porter's not that guy. You might have to build the fill in the gaps with tough guys, guys that put pressure on the other team and maybe just get their emotional heart rate going.
Any questions you have for me? I have one last one for you. Is Quinn Snyder better than you thought?
No, because I had just an enormous amount of respect for him, especially in these types of moments. So he's exactly what I thought. He's smarter than me because I didn't see exactly how they were going to adjust to this. And so it caught me a little bit off guard. But I knew he was a great coach and I saw it. For just what I said about Denver, though, my one question for you is just that. I mean, you have a team of young players. They're kind of growing into roles, but they don't really have any tough guys that you look at and you go, oh, man, that's a guy that's going to put a team on their heels. Do you feel that same way when you watch them? They're talented. They're skilled. But do they have anybody that makes you, you know, emotionally unstable?
I don't know how many of those guys are there, right? Like,
a Marcus Smart type, you know, maybe, yeah, a Patrick Beverly, just somebody
maybe
that's going to like,
maybe PJ Tucker in Houston has a little bit of that. Do the Lakers have anyone that makes it? Or is it just LeBron by himself just because he's such a force?
Yeah. He's a little different. Yeah. He's a little different.
I don't know. It's interesting. I listened to your podcast about, you know, you have either offensive or defensive players. We felt that way about ourselves a lot. I think what we have is, you know, two really, really good basketball teams, neither of which is probably championship caliber. And so it gets into matchups a little bit, right? Last year, you got the good matchups in the playoffs and we got the bad one. And maybe it's going to turn out. We'll see that you got the bad one this time with 3 pick and roll ball handlers. And, you know, it would have been better to play somebody else. I don't know. But I think we got young players that are remarkable. I'll be honest, one of the reasons I wanted to play Denver is they didn't have the experience, right? If you're playing up against Harden, he's got 12 years, and Westbrook's got 10. Anthony Davis, as much as he's kind of an anomaly, but you got LeBron and you got Harden. It's just like Chris Paul. Like, I don't want to play Chris Paul in the playoffs. Like, he's done this a million times. Like, neither of these two rosters have guys that have done it a million times. That's why I thought it was such an interesting matchup to start. So I think that there's just this league's a bitch. Like, sorry to use the word.
It's so hard. It's so hard.
So hard, right? And like, Michael Porter Jr. is having the worst week of his life, and the kid's going to average 25 points a game in this league at some point. But he's going to have to figure out how to move and play defense, because if not, in the playoffs, this is going to happen to him every year.
Yeah, this is a real baptism for him. He's really baptism by fire. He's really learning. I mean, he's so talented. He's so skilled. And you go in that seeding round, and he just looks like an all-star. And then you get him here, and it's like, oh, that's right. You have a weakness, and they're going to go at it every time.
But, I mean, the Jazz better defend. Like, the Jazz have not defended in this series yet. So, like, I mean, again, I think they got Denver in game 4, and the defensive rating was fine. Or in game 3. And then in game 4, they defended for about 6 minutes. But they're going to have to defend a lot more if they're going to win, if they're going to close out Denver in the series.
I'm curious to see how Denver responds tomorrow. I mean, they have such a long shot. And as you mentioned, that bubble, every single player has compared it to prison. And that tug of, hey, we can be out of here tonight is got to be really strong. And I'm really curious to see if they put up a fight, especially given that, in my opinion, in game three, they kind of laid down in that one. So I'm curious to see what we get from them.
We have not seen a team down 3-0 in a game. Not a surprise. This will be the first time we have what happens at 3-1. You know, my theory on this when we came into this was that it would be the greatest basketball we've ever seen and the worst series we've ever seen.
Mm. So far that's tracking. I hope it doesn't track tomorrow.
So we'll see. Like, I can't blame, though. I like, if the Jazz go up 6 at some point, and I just can't – I can't blame a guy if he blinks. Like, I just – in this setting, when – because if we're playing at regular, Denver's thinking right now, all right, we got this one at home. We're going to win it. We just got to go down to Utah and steal a game. We've won there twice. We've won there recently. We'll do it. And then we got them back home for game 7. But there's none of that in this series that makes you feel as though you have that chance the same way if you have home court advantage.
I just keep thinking Denver, I think, finally made some adjustments and has some new data points. Let's see what they do in game 5. The further this goes, you know, Utah has been so comfortable and shot the ball so well. I think at some point, if you drop 2 games in a row when you could have closed out, I do think that those shots get a little bit more pressure filled on Utah's end than Denver's end. But you know what? I mean, who knows? We'll, there's a long way before that. I just want to see how they bounce back in game 5.
All right, I got to give you a little crap here.
Oh, no.
Not a lot. Denver's shooting 43% from 3-2. You're going to miss also, you know.
Man, are they really?
Yes.
Jamal Murray. I mean, 9 of 15 yesterday. He had that first game where he was so on fire. Torrey Craig hit a bunch in that first game. So, yeah.
There's a real chance that game 5 is actually – here's what's really bizarre about this. In the regular season, if you go look at these two teams played, the offensive ratings weren't good. Like, these teams actually defended each other in the regular season. Yeah. There hasn't been a defensive game here yet. I'm really curious. I will say this about this, what Mike Malone does, because I think Mike Malone's approach in game 4, which I feel like he's getting blasted for, by letting never changing his pick and roll coverage and Donovan dropping 51. The Jazz threw 70 fewer passes than they usually throw. They hit 4 corner threes instead of 14. They took far fewer threes than they've been getting. They didn't get the catch and shoot threes. If I'm Mike Malone, I'm coming back with the exact same thing. The only problem with that is convincing your players, by the way, I'm letting you get humiliated again by this guy because it worked. And I think that's
a chance that Donovan goes for another 50-point game tomorrow, because I'm with you. I would much rather that happen. His two 50-point games in the series were the two Denver was in late in the game. I would much rather that happen and Utah only gets off 24 threes again than what happened in games 2 and 3. So I kind of think it'll happen as well.
All right. That sets you up for where we sit. Crossover edition. David Locke of Locked On Jazz.
Adam Ades, Locked On Nuggets.
Make sure you subscribe and follow both of our shows and the Locked On NBA. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil give you the latest of what happened on the NBA today. Every day, Locked On NBA is your short 30-minute bite-sized podcast to get you the latest of what happened each day on the NBA. So make sure you grab that. And then tomorrow, I'll be with Ben Golliver, who's live in the bubble for the Thursday edition. And Adam and Anthony will be back with you on the Friday edition of Locked On NBA. So right now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On NBA.